You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Peanut Tillman. This is my guy, Roman Harper, and this is the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. We're in Phoenix, Arizona at the NFL annual meetings. We've got golf. We've got sunshine. We're trying to hit the ball straight. I'm terrible at golf. You got a two-scratch. You're a two-scratch golfer.
Don't be lying to our people. Don't be lying to them like that, because I'm going to tell you to continue to follow us, because we won't lie to you on this podcast here. Give us a follow. Hit like, follow, give us a review or a comment. Anywhere you listen to your podcast at, whether it's iHeartRadio or Apple Podcasts, please tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Come check us out. This is what we do. We bring you top-tier guests, former players that are now all in their second acts doing great things.
And we got two good ones today. We got two former players that are now head coaches. We have the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, Doug Peterson, and the new head coach of the Carolina Panthers, Frank Reich. Check it out. Today, we got a special guest with us. This gentleman is the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He previously played for the Packers. He won a Super Bowl when he played with the Packers, and he won a Super Bowl when he was a head coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. Welcome to the show, Doug Peterson.
There it is.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
You know what? Let's just get the awkwardness out of the way. Coach, with the Eagles, what was it like to be in Philadelphia, to win a championship, playing in Philadelphia under Sean Payton and the Saints? We go to Philly, he was like, look, the game plan is to get the crowd to boo by halftime, because it is so rough, and the fans there are so special, and they are so unique.
They're mean. They're like,
help bring a championship
Eagles fans
to that
are just,
city
yeah.
after
different.
So long. What was that like?
It was, it's very special. I played in that city. I worked with Coach Reed on his staff in that city, and obviously I was a head coach in that city. And it's you just said something right there when you were with the Saints, and Coach Payton said, hey, if we can jump up and the crowd's going to turn. Well, I took a Jacksonville Jaguar team in there in week three or four this past year, and I said the exact same thing. I said, guys, if we get up on these guys, the crowd is going to turn. And it was we were up 14-0, about to go in 21-0, and the crowd was turning on them. It was turning on them. But that's their passion. And yeah. And for us to win a championship that year, the way we won it, with the guys that we won it with, as you guys know, it's a special bond. We've all been in the locker room. We all understand what that means. And we lost some guys that year. Mm-hmm. But for the city of Philadelphia to wait 52 years and that organization to win a championship, Coach Reed took him to a Super Bowl, and I have a lot of respect for Coach Reed. Mm-hmm. They lost. He's been to like 5 or 6 NFC championship games with the Eagles, and so for us that year, it's very special. And, hate to say it, but there's a lot of Eagle fans around this country that I run into all the time.
I just couldn't get down with the grease on the poles. Didn't they
they didn't want them to climb up them and to tear them down.
But they were still climbing up the poles.
They were still climbing up poles and trees and
they just
and,
y'all.
Everything.
Well, yeah, they just different. They got a little jail cell in the. They had like a judge.
There's a little holding room in there in the stadium. Yeah. I mean, it's just Philly's Philly, man. I mean, I think that's what makes Philly so unique, and a lot of respect for those fans. Yes. And I tell you, they're passionate, but they're loyal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to say it, we could be 4-10, and they're still going to show out. They're still going to pack that stadium, and they're going to hang with you all season long.
So how would you compare Eagles fans to Packer fans? No, Packer fans are like, that real deep Wisconsin, that real
You've
thick.
Been there.
Oh, I've been there a few times. I feel like they're like the nicest fans, though. Extremely nice and loyal in the cold, and they get so much snow. They don't throw snowballs at you.
Hold on. Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
They've had two quarterbacks for like 50 years there. It's true. Or some crazy thing.
Very true.
You know what I'm saying? So they've had it well. They've had it good. They've had a lot of success. They've been to a lot of playoff games, mm-hmm. a couple Super Bowls. So it's a different crowd. But you're right. In the wintertime, you're going to see nothing but blaze orange, because they just got out of the hunting woods and they came to a game at 12 noon. But again, they're very loyal. They're very supportive. They're passionate about the Packers. I loved playing there for the 8 years that I did. And again, there's a lot of Packer fans around this country, and I still run into a lot of them.
Yeah, they travel well.
They do. They do travel well.
So when you were in Green Bay, I was backing on Brett Favre. Like, what was that experience like for you? And how did you make it last so long being his?
Not just the backup to him, but that quarterback room. What was that like? Because you had a lot of great coaches there too, and all those.
I had Steve Mariucci in 95 when I went there, and then it transitioned to Marty Mordenweg, and then ultimately we had Andy Reid.
Yeah,
Andy Reid was our position coach there. And Darrell Bevell, who's still coaching, he's in Miami right now. He was one of our position coaches at the time. So we've had a lot of great coaches. Tom Rossley was the offensive coordinator at the time. And then in our room there was Brett, there was Jim McMahon, there was Matt Hasselbeck.
I forgot Jim. Yeah, when we left the Bears.
Matt Hasselbeck was in
there.
Matt.
Yeah.
We've had, Henry Burris. Who,
oh my good from Canada.
From Canada, yeah. Hall of Fame.
He won a what you call it in Canada.
You don't even
know who Henry Burris is.
I did.
He won a great cup.
Do.
Yes. Oh my
played,
God.
Played in Chicago for a couple of years.
He won a great cup, right?
Won a great cup.
Yeah,
won a great cup. So we've had really, really good quarterback rooms. Obviously they were very lighthearted rooms. So there was football being taught, but we enjoyed each other and had a great time.
So Doug, following up that question, so after you finished your career, playing-wise, when did you know you wanted to get in coaches? You just rattled off 7 different great head coaches that were all around you at your different times in Green Bay. We didn't even talk about with Derek Rhodes. Coach Rhodes was coaching defense, too.
I wasn't with him, though.
Okay.
We missed. I missed Coach Rhodes.
That's fine. But you still had an influence of all kinds of coaches. So when did you know that you want to get in that profession?
So my last 2 years in Green Bay, I really started thinking, I was the backup quarterback, and it really started getting me thinking about what I wanted to do after football, how I wanted to transition. I wanted to stay in football somehow, mm-hmm. some way. And so the wheels started turning, and it was not till that last year in 2004 that I really felt like coaching was going to be in my future. I just didn't know at what level, whether it was going to be high school, college, pro. You know, I spent a lot of time with coaches, picking their brains, you know, to see just, as you guys know, the grind of a season, the grind of a year. It's a lot.
It's a lot of time.
What these coaches go through, I'm like, do I really want to do that? You know, maybe or if you college, you know, if you're a college coach, you're on the road recruiting.
Yeah.
You got two cell phones, you know, it's a recruiting phone and your personal. I don't know if I want to do that. And so I settled on high school football. Mike Sherman, who was my head coach in Green Bay when I stepped away, gave me some great advice because he was a high school football coach, you know, in his time. And he said, Doug, he said, just you got to find a place where you enjoy teaching the game of football.
Yeah.
Wherever you can go and just teach the game, figure out where that is for you and then plug in. And so for me, it was high school. So as soon as I retired, I got into high school football down in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I did that for 4 years.
What school?
Calvary Academy.
Okay.
I was in there with Evangel Christian.
I was going to say, did you have to match up with them?
Oh, yeah.
Evangel was pretty good.
Yeah, they beat the brakes off us a couple times. But, yeah, I did high school coaching for 4 years. But in my
– Was that immediately after you
right
retired?
Right after.
So yeah. No time
2005,
off.
2005, I had no time
head
off.
Head coach or position?
Head coach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I went right in as a head coach.
Okay.
And did that for 4 years. But there was still something inside of me that there was more.
Okay.
Right? There was more. And having been in the league for a combined total of about 14 years on and off, you know, when you're around the game, you want to get to that next level. And so Andy Reid had a quality control job open and hired me in 2009 to come back to Philadelphia as a quality control guy. So I jumped from high school back into the NFL.
So did you have any other plans or career plans or goals, aspirations, I would say, outside of coaching when you were done?
No.
This is a one.
It was like, man, I'm going all right in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
Chips are all
cash,
in the middle of the table.
I'm
like, here we go. Yeah. No, I you know, I'm a business major. I got a degree in business. But I was like, I don't think I really want to sit behind a desk or you know, I'm not the type that's going to go sell something.
Yeah.
You know, I was a football guy.
Yeah.
And so –
I mean, you could sell me with
in.
Being a head coach, though. Like, yeah, you could. I'm feeling it now. Like, you could sell me with it. You could sell me with that. I like your confidence. What are those conversations like, though, when you typically it's the OCDC and then you have a successful season or two and then your name kind of gets floated around to becoming a head coach? Like, what are those conversations like? Is it just, are you on the phone talking to other teams? Is it your agent, like, hey, I got some news. Philadelphia Eagles want to possibly your name's being
this
tossed
a good
around.
Conversation and a good question because you asked Sean something very similar to this yesterday.
Yeah, like how does that even like occur or how does it arise about you
so
becoming
a
head coach?
So for me, I was the offensive coordinator in Kansas City with Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when Andy got fired in Philly in 2012. Got hired in 2013. He brought me as offensive coordinator. I was just the quarterback coach in Philly, left to go be his OC. And then, you know, we had early success in Kansas City. Alex Smith was our quarterback.
Yep.
And we had early success for those first 2-3 years. Well, as you guys know, in this business, OCs and DCs, when you have success, their names start to pop up around the different circles for head coaches. And so for me, my agent, you know, had been kind of talking to, you know, some of these different circles, the guys that, you know, the powers to be around the NFL. And you know, actually it was in 2014, my name had come up the first time. And I told my agent, I said, I'm not ready to be head coach. I need another year. I'm just not there yet. So I played or coached the 2015 season. And that's when Philadelphia, and there was a lot of familiarity with going back to Philadelphia for me. It was a good transition, good fit. And got hired in 2016.
So in that little time where you were like, I'm not ready, did you start to prepare in another way? Did you start to say, okay, I might need to think about some other app? You need to do that.
You have to really transition your mind from, you know, you're an offensive coordinator coaching one side of the ball.
Right.
Now you got to think big picture.
Yeah.
Now you got to think organizationally.
Yeah.
Not just the football side, but you're also dealing with the business side.
Right.
And
business
so for
major.
Me, yeah, yeah. So for me, it was about, okay, learning more of the business side too. Mm-hmm. And you know.
But do you do that as, like, so when you're the OC and you're under, like, I think Andy Reid, we can say he can be a Hall of Fame coach one day. Like,
yes.
He's an amazing coach. But you're doing a job calling all the plays and getting the offensive side of the ball or offensive players ready. Do you get coached as the OC? Are you actually like taking notes on how Coach Reed is running the team, how Coach Reed is running the business, how Coach Reed is interacting with the team, how Coach Reed is doing everything with the GM and the pro personnel in college? Like, did you start taking notes of like, okay, this is what he does. Okay, he does this, he does that. Like, are you still getting coached yourself?
You know, it's interesting because the 3 years I was in Kansas City being the offensive coordinator, I got to spend a lot of time with Coach Reed because he's an offensive mind and all. And so we did game plans together and the whole thing. So those 3 years, he really started pouring into me what it was like to be a head coach.
Okay.
And so for 3 years, I was just like a sponge, just absorbing everything that he, all his knowledge and wisdom and everything. Because, you know, he spent 14 seasons as the head coach in Philadelphia before he went to Kansas City. And so this is the first time sort of behind the scenes look for me of what a head coach looks like. And so he does that with all of his guys. You look at the Sean McDermott's and the Ron Rivera's and the guys that have, you know, Matt Nagy's and the Eric Bieniemy's of the world. And those guys that are going to go on to have been head coaches and will be head coaches.
How many is that?
You know,
you just named like six head coaches that came off of him. I guess I didn't realize that,
you know, but that's what he does.
Yeah.
He's more about coaching his coaches than he is coaching the players.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what he did for the 3 years. And you just got to be a sponge and take it all in.
So when your coaching career ended with the Eagles, all right, you really took a whole year off.
I did.
And how important was that for you to take a full year off to kind of decompress? I did that after my career playing years. Peanut did not.
I did not.
So
foolish.
What would you say was the reasoning behind that, and would you suggest it for others?
The reasoning for me, coming off of the 2020 season, right after the 2020 season, that's the pandemic season. It was rough on all clubs, and it was obviously rough on us in Philadelphia. We didn't play well, quarterback issues and things like that. And I was not in a good place mentally, physically. I just was not in a good place. Looking back on it, it was probably a blessing to be released, because I needed time, you know, for me. I needed to get away from the game. I needed to get away from football and just separate myself just a little bit and really kind of clear your head and really think about what life is going to look like. Either you're going to step away from the game and retire, or do I want to continue and coach? And so as the 21 season went, and I did, you know, I had some issues with my brother, and you know, he passed away to pancreatic cancer that year, so I got to spend a lot of time with my brother.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And spend a lot of time with him and his wife, and so there were life things. We had a wedding. Yeah. Our oldest son got married that year, so there's things in life that come up that sometimes, as you guys know, in football, you miss, right? You miss. Sometimes the job precedes family, and that's, you know, you don't like that, right? So this gave me a chance to really dig into the family a little bit and be around family, and also give me a perspective to how, if given an opportunity again, how to coach again and how to be a better coach and how to really influence players, right? And how to lead an organization, lead a team. Because I knew I it didn't take long. It took a couple months, but I knew I wanted to get back into coaching. I wasn't done. I was young. I'm young. I'm in, you know, mid-50s, but I'm relatively young.
Rome is too. He's like mid-50 something. Y'all got the same hair. Y'all like mid-50s.
You know, we got that gray wear.
It ain't going nowhere.
But yeah, so that year was really good. So I, you know, but you look at Frank Reich. Frank Reich got let go during the middle of the season, and he got right back into it this year, which for some is different, right? Yeah. It's just, but for me, it was what I needed at the time to get back in, because that window of opportunity closes so fast in this league that I didn't want that to pass by either. You know, and I had opportunities to be a coordinator again in 21. The teams were not going to get the best version of me,
right?
Because I was in a bad place. Mentally and physically.
Kudos for you for like realizing that and kind of stepping away and thanks for sharing that. I think a lot of people need to do more of the, you know what, I just need take my time off, take my 365. You got great advice. Who told you to take your time off? Your GM?
My GM. Yeah, Mickey Loomis told
Mickey
me.
Mickey Loomis?
Mickey
yeah.
Loomis said, you know, if you want to be involved with football in any shape, form, or fashion, he said, I would suggest you take some time. Take a year off. Like, you've been able good. You played a long career. You made plenty of money. Take some time. Really decompress and then figure out, like, self-reflect and, like, yeah. really get away from the game and then say, you might start missing it again, kind of like maybe what you did.
Yeah. Well, and you start feeling better, and you feel like you can be a better version of yourself
yeah.
the next time around, right? Because of the experiences that you went through,
yeah.
You know, leading up to that decision.
And this that was your first break because you stopped playing.
You went right into coaching. Stopped playing, high school coaching, NFL coaching. So yeah,
that was your first break.
It was my first break in a long time.
Yeah.
Good. Well, yeah. Good you know? For both of y'all for doing. I don't think I ever took time off. I just kind of kept going. So I'm envious of both of y'all for doing that. But yeah, that's another topic another day. So when you were in Philly, Jalen Hurts, you guys drafted him, and it probably wasn't received well around the league. Now I know you're not with.
We talked about these Philly fans booing, so that's just natural reaction.
It is natural, but it wasn't very well received in the beginning, mm-hmm. right? I know you're no longer there, but he's gone out, played well, you know, had a MVP caliber season. What was it about Jalen that drew you to like liking him and drafting him?
So I was there obviously when we drafted him in 2020. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there on day two of the draft on Friday, and you know, Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie, myself, I can remember having a conversation saying, hey, if Jalen is sitting there at our pick, we should pick him. We should take him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, all of us were like, yes, yes. And it wasn't to draft him to replace Carson Wentz at the
yeah.
time. In this league, you need two quarterbacks. You need mm-hmm. you need a solid backup quarterback. And so we felt like that this was a great option. He's a tremendous athlete, good quarterback, smart kid. But before all of that, I've had a chance to talk to Brian Daboll, who coached him in Alabama,
yeah.
right? Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. You know, I talked to a lot of people, and just watching his film and knowing his story, this guy's wired the right way. This guy is a football player.
Yeah.
And I just felt that if this kid gets an opportunity, wherever, whether it's in Philly or maybe somewhere else down the road, this kid is going to shine. I just felt that in my heart of hearts, just understanding who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the short, you know, 1 year that I was with him, I saw that. I saw his work ethic, the way he prepared. And he was the backup. He started the season like the third quarterback, and then he made his way to the second, and then ultimately he played and started the last four games of the season that year. But I just knew that if this kid gets an opportunity, he's going to do some really good special things. And you know, we've seen it here now, not only last year but this past season, or I should say two seasons ago, and then this last year, just what he's capable of doing. And I had a chance to see him back in February, and just you know, just tell him how proud I was of him and how he's battled through
Philly
a lot of adversity.
Philly fans owe you.
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
they owe you a ton for bringing him in.
I think as a former player, it really does mean the most when you have your former colleagues, your coaches that you pass through times, and they really still all keep up with you. And you hear those words like, hey, I'm watching, I'm proud of you. We do take that for granted. So, well, we don't take it for granted, and it does mean a lot. And I'm sure you had that when you were a former player and would run to other coaches.
Yeah. Other coaches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Tell you those kinds of things. Yes.
Yeah.
And
it means a lot.
Chris Ballard was my guy. Chris Ballard drafted me. So I could talk to Chris, and I could text Chris right now. And I tell everyone to this day, man, I came to Chicago because Chris Ballard, he saw something in me, the heart of hearts. And was just like, no, I'm telling you, get this kid from Louisiana Lafayette. I know no one knows the school. Nobody knows where it's at. But draft this kid.
I know where it's at.
Well, yeah, the Louisiana connects. I appreciate it, though.
No doubt. So Doug, in your current situation, we all have heard the stories about how toxic the situation was in Jacksonville before you arrived. And what could you say was the biggest thing And how important, sorry, not the biggest thing, but how important was it for you to change that culture?
You know, the biggest thing for me, and again, this was all part of 21 being out of football. Right, how was I going to be the better version of myself? And then when the Jacksonville thing started gaining a little more traction, and then that might be the landing spot for me, I had to kind of research the situation a little bit and see just kind of what went on down there. And yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. The players were really in a bad place, you know, mentally coming out of that season. And for me, it was about, okay, I'm the next head coach standing in front of these guys. How are they going to trust me?
Mm-hmm.
Because they lost faith and trust in the head coach before. So how are they going to trust me? I'm a head coach figure, right? So I didn't even know if I was going to have players at the offseason program.
Right.
Voluntary program. Everybody's out. And they're like, I ain't going. You know, we got drove into ground. Our practices were hard. I mean, this is the offseason. I mean, you know. So I put together a message to the guys that first day. And I actually did it over the course of a couple of weeks. But I talked a lot about communication. I talked a lot about that. I talked a lot about trust. You know, in me trusting you, you trusting me. I talked a lot about the people that we surround ourselves with, right? The right people in our building, outside of our building, mm-hmm. and so I just kept formulating these ideas with the players, and slowly over time, I think I was able to gain their trust, right? And then you know, we just kind of worked through, you know, because there were questions like, Coach, how are these OTA practices going to go? I said, what do you mean? We're going to be out there an hour and 20 minutes. We're going to get our work done. We're going to be done. What are you talking about? It's going to be easy. You know, we're going to meet and lift some weights and you're going to go home. Six-hour day. Wow. You know, you go get paid, whatever. But I think, too, I think they had respect for me because I sat in their chair, you know, as a former player. Mm-hmm. And I could relate to them. And so there's a lot of that that goes back and forth that really sort of impacted our football team really heading into training camp that year and still really not knowing how we were going to do. You know, I felt like we could be a 500 ball club that first year. You know, we exceeded probably everybody else's expectations but our own. As you guys know, you only believe in yourself and your team, and you felt like you're a good football team, and we did some good things last year.
So one of the things, we all have our welcome to the NFL moment, right? I know we all have them as players. But I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to ask you, what was your welcome to the NFL moment as a head coach? Like, what was that moment for you? He's like, damn, so this is what it's like to be a head coach. Like, I didn't see that coming. And it just, like, really, like, holy, you know what? It kind of shook me. What was that moment?
It was actually my first regular season game in Philadelphia in 2016. Played the Cleveland Browns at home at Lincoln Financial, and – I coached the preseason games, and it was like, oh, yeah, these are great preseason games, but this is the regular season.
Yeah.
And that ball teed up, and it kicked off, and I went, oh, boy. In my mind, I'm like, okay, this just got real. Because now you're managing the game.
Yeah.
I got a little red flag in my pocket that I may have to throw.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to call timeouts, and, you know, I got to flip to the defensive side, and I got to listen to what Coach Schwartz is talking about, you know. And so it just became kind of that aha, like, this is real. This is now, okay, I kind of like it, but at the same time, you're kind of paranoid a little bit.
That's the first time I've heard a coach say that. It's like, man, this has got real. I heard players say it all the time, but a coach, one was like.
I'm going to tell you something. It gets real because, you know, and then at the end of we won the game. Plus we're playing a rookie quarterback, Carson Wentz, rookie, first game. He's a rookie, you know, so there's a lot of things kind of going against you a little bit in that first deal. We ended up 7-9 that season, but you learn, right? You learn from the good, the bad, the ugly, as we say, and each week we got a little bit better and ended up winning a championship in year two.
Now pick one real quick, because I got to know this. I know they want us to hurry up. I know we only got a couple minutes, but who are you rooting for in this past Super Bowl, the Eagles or the Chiefs?
I plead the fifth.
Okay, all right. I'll accept that answer. I will accept that answer. It was very close, but I had to know. I had to know.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
It's all good.
Read between the lines.
Here we go. All right. Here's a good one, then, Doug. Who is on your personal Mount Rushmore of influence? Not just football, but in life for you.
Well, you got four.
I get four.
Because some people might not know how many on Mount Rushmore.
I get it. I didn't.
I understand. But one of them is my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He's number one.
Good. Love
it. He's number one. Number two, I would definitely have to put Andy Reid up there. The impact he had, not only as my playing career, but as my coaching career, professional career.
Sure.
Andy would be one of those. My dad's on that list.
Okay.
My dad passed away. He never got to see me coach a head football. As a head coach, he never got to see me coach a game. He passed away, actually, the last preseason weekend, right before the first regular season, right before that Cleveland Browns game.
Yeah, right before the kickoff.
So he passed away that week before, so he never got to see me head coach. So, but he's on there. The impact he had in my life as a, you know, he coached me hard, probably shaped a lot of my beliefs and the way I am today. And then the fourth one for me, I could name. There's a lot of guys that have influenced or shaped my career. I'll tell you this: Mike Holmgren was another head coach I had in Green Bay.
Yeah,
he pulled me aside. I was playing. He pulled me aside during training camp, and we were actually passing each other in the building. And he told me, he said, "Doug, you're a good quarterback, but you can be so much better." He says, "You need to really focus on taking your game to another level. You know the offense, you know what to do, you can manage the whole thing, but it's now it's kind of like just cut it loose."
Yeah.
Right? Don't hold back, just go cut it loose. Take it to another notch. And that really challenged me from a player's perspective, but it also has challenged me now a little bit, you know, cuz back in 17 we were, you know, I was thinking about, you know, do all these fourth down decisions and 2-point conversion decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like taking your team to another level. It's like cutting the guys loose. Don't hold the guys back. And so for me, those would be the four guys I would put up there that really shaped and influenced, you know, my career.
Now, was that, is that baby Jesus or is that the old Jesus? Is it 32-year-old Jesus or is it the baby Jesus?
Talladega Nights, if those that don't know that.
It's a great movie. I caught on to that one.
I had
baby
to ask.
Jesus. This is a full-grown Jesus.
Okay, my last question, though, is we retire every year. And you, when you were retiring, you were trying to figure out what should I do next. What would your advice be on a player that is retiring after this season? Going into retirement, what would your advice be to him?
Wow. First of all, if somebody is either if they're contemplating retirement or thinking about retirement, just make sure that it's the right decision, because, you know, I feel like that when guys get in that situation. One, there's probably something waiting for them,
right?
Post, you know, career, right? Whether it's still in the business or somewhere else, you know. So that usually pulls guys in different directions that way. But, you know, the advice is just to enjoy, reconnect with your families, right? Reconnect with your friends. Reconnect some of the relationships that sometimes football can tug on just a little bit. You think about our spouses. I mean, they're the ones that probably sacrifice the most in this, especially on the coaching side, you know, because the time away, and they're the ones that are, you know, running the kids to schools and grocery shopping and keeping the house together and all that kind of stuff. And so reconnecting right there, but just enjoy it. Enjoy the memories, enjoy your teammates. As you head into retirement, look back on your career. You know, enjoy those moments that the bonds that you had in the locker room. I think those are the ones you carry for a lifetime.
Right.
Right. Those friendships, whether it's you've been on, you know, multiple teams or one team. But just enjoy it. Enjoy life. Sit back and, you know, just think about the next chapter and the direction you want to go.
Cool.
Doug,
that's a wrap.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
How can you not root for the Jacksonville Jaguars after listening to Doug or Coach Peterson? I'm really excited. I didn't really know a ton about him, but I'm really rooting for him now moving forward and the decisions and where this organization is going. Like, I'm really excited about where they're going and what he's doing.
I think you should be, Doug. He really showed himself. He was very natural, very candid with us, and really opened up about his own experiences as being a head coach and also a former player.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
it. I'm not guarding like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This next coach we're going to be listening to, Frank Wright, really excited about what everything he's doing for the Carolina Panthers and going forward. Let's listen in on his experiences of what brought him to this place and where he's leading this organization. Our next guest, and I'm get to do the honors of introducing this man, this young man right here. He's currently the head coach for the Carolina Panthers. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion, winning a ring with the Colts and the Eagles. He also played quarterback in the NFL for 13 years. Mr. Frank, well, coach, head coach, Frank Wright. Now, but I wasn't all the way done here because I want to talk about the press conference when you got introduced to the Carolina as the Carolina Panthers' latest head coach. I thought your family, you were good. But the family overall was excellent.
Love it.
You guys had the Carolina Blues nailed down. The lighting was excellent. Your speech was great. They showed the highlight tape of you throwing the first touchdown pass in Carolina Panthers history. Yeah. It was to Pete Meslars, the tight end, as a matter of fact. They had white jerseys on. He had Pete Meslars there. He had a whole bunch of his former teammates there. The Carolina Panthers really went all out. David Tepper, everybody. Mrs. Wright, the daughter. Everybody looked great that day. It was beautiful. I must say, I was amazed. I was wowed. And now I'm in the presence of greatness. So thank you for being here.
Hey, I love that intro. And yeah, it was a great day. And when you have three daughters, you got to get the fashion right. Right?
It was on point.
How old are your daughters?
The daughters, they're all married. So they're 33, 31, and 27.
Yeah,
so,
the husbands look good too. Everybody was in the colors.
Grandkids, you know, the whole bit. That's cool, the grandkids were kind of not in the shot, in the spotlight, but we had a great day.
That's pretty cool. So,
okay, here we go. So let's just get the awkwardness out the way. So I didn't even know this until I read a little bio earlier, was that you were the quarterback's coach in with the Indianapolis Colts in Super Bowl 44, where your team was 14-2 in the regular season, and you eventually lost to the Super Bowl to a 13-3 New Orleans Saints team.
Yeah.
How was that possible? You guys were favored by most of the experts all week long. What went wrong that day?
I love the fact that you just hit me right in the face with this to start. That's the way to go. I mean, that's the way to bring it strong. You know, we did. We had a lead, I believe, at halftime, and they came out of that fake onside, surprise onside kick, called by Coach Payton, start the second half, really turned the tide. Really turned the tide. But I was just talking about that with a couple guys last night, that game, but a couple of the Eagles guys, about the difficulty of losing the Super Bowl. It's rough. It's a rough feeling. It's a bad game to lose.
Yeah, I've lost two. Flipping it, I'll give you, this is a layup though. Like, how was it, your first coaching gig, 2006, 2007, you were one of the, I think, quarterbacks or quality
I was just
control?
I had kind of been an off-season intern. Was that not actually there during the season, but had been there in the off-season. So the real first experience of it on field as far as the victory was in Philadelphia in 17. Mm-hmm. I did do that internship when they won it in 7, but the true experience was in 17 with the Eagles.
Yeah, because you were on staff, not on staff with the Bears, Colts, and I was on the field with the Bears at the time. And to answer the question or follow up with it, yeah, it sucks. I still haven't gotten over my two Super Bowl losses. I'm like 0-2 with Peyton Manning. I don't even like Peyton Manning because he's just like destroyed us in Super Bowls, man. I just, why did you bring that up? And he never lets me live that down.
No, because I literally you won my one. And, the onside kick, like you talked about, we had practiced that so many times, and I was supposed to recover it. But your guys, I'm not going to bring his name up, but kind of touched it, and then it kind of went awry.
Yeah.
But that's why you onside kick it to the Saints sideline, because we knew if anything goes wrong, we wanted to be on our sideline so we could get the refs and be arguing like it was us. And that was back in the day when you couldn't pull guys out of a pile.
Was that one of those one where just the kickoff team knew it was coming? Did you guys tell anybody else? Or did everyone know it was a pregame? Like, I never even heard the backstory.
Okay, all right, Fred, here we go. So we get into halftime. It's an extended period.
Sure.
In halftime. Sean comes over to the defense because most of the defense is on the kickoff team. He said, I'm running a surprise onside. And we're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And we thought he would change by the time we actually went out there. And he was like, I'm still calling it. Like, it's still up. We're running ambush. And we were like, all right, let's go. So I don't think I even got nervous because I had recovered it so many times and practiced it. And then when the play went awry, we had never practiced that. We didn't know what was going to happen if it.
Unbelievable.
If it went wrong. And it went wrong. And we just happened to fall on it. So it kind of went crazy. But yes, that is a whole backstory. Sean came in the beginning. He said he was going to do it at halftime. As soon as we went in there, he was so confident with it. And we were like, all right, let's do it. And we knew we needed to do something because we literally had not stopped the Colts all day. You guys.
Yeah. I also think in that game, if you remember, we got a little, at the end of the first half, if I remember correctly, we got a little conservative.
You did. You went with the fullback dive. You should have just stayed pedal on the metal because we hadn't slowed you down at all.
I know. We still regret that one a little bit. But
those are the only things that really changed that whole game. That's awesome. All right. Well, here we go. Let's go to currently. So what drew you to Carolina besides your former, playing there, all those other things? What really drew you to this opportunity? Because I know when David Tepper talked about it, he mentioned, you know, the other candidates, and he said, look, when Frank Wright came in, he had it nailed down of a future plan.
Yeah.
His vision was something that everybody could just get behind immediately.
Yeah, and really what I felt when I walked into that room in the interview was like, I felt like we were working. there was an instant connection, you know, with the Teppers, with Dave and Nicole Tepper, with Scott Fitter, you know, the GM, with the whole crew that was there. And, you know, it just felt like a conversation. It didn't feel like an interview. And that in both the first interview and the second interview. So obviously I'd played there, lived there for 13 years. So I already felt like home. My children are living in North Carolina. But the commitment and just hearing, you know, Mr. Tepper talk about, okay, you know, he and Nicole had been owners now for a number of years, but hey, they're ready to put the pedal to the metal. Let's go. The commitment from them, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And so this is your second opportunity as a head coach.
Yeah.
And maybe you could give us a little bit insight of some things that you learned from your first experience that you will be different, and how will you treat this one different overall as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't want to say it's easy. It's not easy, but like when you first become a head coach the first time, it is a little bit like drinking, you know, water from a fire hose, right? I mean, it can be overwhelming. There's so much stuff going on. This time around, it just felt like, okay, let's go.
Seasoned vet.
I know what we're doing. This is version 2.0. You know, right. you get to debug things, right? It's like an app. You know, you get version 2. It's updated. It's improved. You got out the bad program. You know, for me, you know, that was just a question of understanding the chemistry of the staff, you know, understanding, you know, the team we're trying to build. And that's what we were able to go in and paint that vision for Mr. Tepper.
So what's been the toughest thing being a head coach? Like, say your first time, like we just asked Doug that, you know, everyone has that welcome to the NFL moment as a player. What was your welcome to the NFL moment as a coach, as a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, you're no longer just calling the plays. You know, you're over every aspect of the football operations. So that's both the, you know, welcome to the NFL. But honestly, for me, that was like what I wanted. Like that was like, I couldn't wait for that. I felt like I was made for that. So, you know, to learn, to go in, to dive in with the defense, you know, get to know the defensive players, get, you know, get in defensive meetings with the coaches, you know, understand. I'm not trying to micromanage what the defense is doing, but you really got to put your hand and touch on every part of the team.
Yeah, Doug talked about that. He said, like, you know, he remembered, like, oh, man, I'm not just calling offense play. I got to switch over to the defense.
Right.
Just, like, listen in. And it really is different. Was your main goal always to be a head coach? Or, like, when did that decision come in the factor, like, you know what, I'm going to coach, I want to be a head coach? Well, naturally, you want to be probably the best, which is the head coach, you want to be the lead guy, especially playing quarterback. When did that happen for you?
Like, when I was like six, you know, I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, I came from a family of coaches, you know, so, no, I wanted to be a player first, you know, like all of us, right? We wanted to play. But when I was in 1985, my rookie season, Bill Polian came up to me after the season was over, who was the general manager at the time, and he said, you're going to play a long time as a player, and then when you finish, you're going to be a head coach in this. You're going to be a head coach in this league. That was in 1985 after my rookie season. So, you know, having a guy like that come up to you, I come from a family of coaches. My dad was a head high school coach. My mom was a coach.
What'd your mom coach?
She coached everything. She coached field hockey, cheerleading, track and field.
Okay. I mean,
you know, she was the ultimate high school teacher. I can coach anything. So my brother's a head coach. You know, I just think I'm wired that way, been brought up that way. So, but the thing is, you guys know this, you know, seeing it from the player side, that, you know, as a coach, you don't want to be that guy who's coming in just trying to climb the ladder. So I never took it like that. I honestly didn't. I knew, hey, because I played 14 years. So, and then I took 7 years where I was out of football before I got, so I didn't get back into coaching until I was really in my mid-40s. So did I ever think I'd make it? I didn't know. I was just going to take it year by year, do the best I could, and hope that it worked out.
So when you got away from football, you said for 7 years, right?
Yeah.
What were you doing in that time? We often ask players. Doug said he never took time off.
He went straight
in. He went right into coaching. You took a year off. I didn't take a year off.
Yeah.
I wish I would have took a year off. Like, what did you do and what made you just decide to stay away from the game?
Yeah, so I had opportunities to go into coaching right away. But mm-hmm. As we talked about earlier at the onset of the program, I have three young daughters. You know, I think when I finished, they were like 9, 7, and 4. So I knew once you get into coaching, man, it's 100 plus hours a week. And yeah. I was like, all right, I know I want to coach, but I want to help raise my children first, mm-hmm. you know? So I wanted to help them with homework, go to swim meets, you know, all that stuff. So I said, I'm going to take a couple years, really invest into my family, my children. You know, my wife and I could do some things together because mm-hmm. once you get into coaching things, it's a commitment. And then we also, you know, I went into full-time ministry. And so I was able to kind of keep my own schedule. Did a lot of traveling and speaking. So that was the combination of things that I did for those few years.
So now that you are a head coach, every coach has their philosophy. Every coach has their saying of what they think the team should be. We obviously know in Carolina it's the keep pounding. We both played in Carolina for a year. Well, you played two, I played one. What has been your philosophy or what is your philosophy like going into the season?
Yeah, no, the keep pounding thing is a way to talk about what we've always talked about for me, and that's that keep pounding is a relentless pursuit for sustained excellence, mm-hmm. right? So we talked about that as an organization already with the Panthers, right? So we're going to clearly define what keep pounding, and that's a relentless pursuit for sustained excellence. Yeah, we all want the goal. We all want the Super Bowl that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But we think the best way to get there is to create that sustained excellence, like create a high floor so that when the opportunities present itself to reach for those championships, we're in striking distance.
So you're with the Panthers now. You guys have made the trade of the offseason. Let's just go ahead and call it what it is.
Y'all been busy.
We've been busy.
Extremely busy.
Very busy.
I like the moves you're making, though.
Yes.
I like it.
With this opportunity to draft a franchise quarterback, like all the pressure that comes with that, all the decision-making, all of the thought process, the mindset, the so many hours, the manpower to create all these things, this opportunity. Could you just give us a little bit of insight? I'm not telling us to give us the pick, even though I think I know.
But what's that process been
yeah,
like?
Yeah, what is just, that? All just, of
what
that,
has the process been like?
Give me
more
all
than
of
anything.
That.
Yeah, it's great. You know, with Scott Fitter, the GM, Dan Morgan, assistant GM, the whole crew, Mr. and Mrs. Tepper, they've been great. So the process is, you know, dive in, right? Scott and his crew, they already have they've been evaluating these quarterbacks for, you know, forever. So mm-hmm. I just get here. So I sit down. I listen to where are our scouts at? Where's Scott at on his view of all these quarterbacks mm-hmm. as we as a coaching staff begin to dive in? Now, hey, let's get out and meet these guys. Let's, you know, let's go to the pro days. Let's sit down, have dinner with them.
We've seen you.
Yeah. let's bring them into our building. You know, let's dig down deep and take every second, every hour, every day to finish and confirm what we believe from the very start of this process. And that's what we're doing. It's a lot of fun. These guys are fun to hang out with.
So, yeah, I didn't
well, and then on top of that, right, so you get that trade as we're talking about, and when you said about the moves, the big one was going to number one, but now this free agency thing, you know, Mr. Tepper just said, okay, let's go. Let's surround this guy with some playmakers, Miles Sanders, right, DJ Chark, Adam Thielen, you know, Hayden Hurst, right? Let's get some playmakers
big
around.
So is the owner like super involved in like, hey, I want this guy, I want that guy?
He's looking and hearing everything.
Okay.
He's obviously a brilliant guy and brilliant enough to know, hey, let Scott and I handle that. But he's involved in it. You know, he wants to know.
Sure. Yeah.
And in particular, I think he's involved in all the numbers and the cap and the contracts and how everything's set up. I think he has his hands on all that.
Nice. So we were talking earlier about your coaching staff. You got a lot of ex-players. You got Josh, you got Deuce, you got D'Angelo.
Hold on, Josh McCown. Let's put a name on it.
Oh.
Not everybody just knows Josh.
You're right. My bad.
Played 18 years. We should.
Yeah. Like 15 teams.
He was one of my teammates. He was with me in Chicago.
I was with his brother Luke in New Orleans, so I know Josh very well.
Yeah, but your coaching staff, it has a lot of former players in it. Like, yeah. Tell me what that process was like to hire those specific guys.
Yeah, I mean, Deuce is the first guy I called because
he was the first one on staff.
Yeah, yeah. He was. You know, we were together in Philadelphia, and I just know. You know, I'm Mr. Even Keel. Listen, I'm not a yeller and screamer. Everybody knows that. I'm kind of even keel, mm-hmm. keep, you know, poised. you know, their intensity and all that, but I need Deuce's fire and brimstone. Deuce brings the fire and brimstone, you know. So, and then brilliant offensive, you know, he's a brilliant offensive mind, but really has helped me when we were in Philadelphia in the run game. His perspective on some of the stuff in the run game is really good. And in the protection world, which, you know, you have to be great at. But I, overall, I just wanted to blend, right?
Yeah.
I like the former player thing, obviously. I think there's advantages to being a former player, but I also think there's advantages to the coaches who have been coaching since they've been 20. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they bring a certain football acumen that a former player who played for four, these guys have been coaching ball all those years that we were playing. You know what I mean? So there's a certain advantage to that. So get the blend of that, old, young, get the whole thing.
I just like that when Deuce, he yells so much, like he gonna yell and give you everything it got to him.
Well, it was funny because when you saw NFL Hard Knocks, it really put really shined a light on that whole Detroit staff.
Yeah.
And the staff were the stars.
Yeah.
And so we could talk about the players, but nobody cared.
The players were rooting for the staff.
We were rooted. Everybody was rooting for that staff, and Deuce really came out the box. I didn't realize how fiery he was until that whole deal.
Him and Aaron, I was like, they was my two favorite people on the show.
It was really good, my man, AG. Okay, Frank. So Coach Reich, sorry.
No, you're good.
Thank you.
please.
It's hard for me. I'm from Alabama.
It's still coach. Even though you're older and we're kind of, I still say coach too.
All right. They want me to ask you about your Mount Rushmore, and I want to get to that. But I got to know this because you burst on my scene, and I became a fan of yours when I was a young man, when you led the Buffalo Bills back with this big comeback in the playoffs. Like, that is
the greatest comeback ever.
Who Frank Reich was known for the longest time. And now you're the head coach. How has that been, this transition of like, all right, this is what I'm known for, this backup that was the Macklin comeback forever, and now the head coach that's going to go and lead this program and this organization to hopefully win in Super Bowls?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great I think it's a great background to step into this position, you know, because I knew, right, I was a part of that team. I was the backup quarterback.
Right.
You know, I was just I was a backup guy, right?
Yeah.
So, and I know that when you have a comeback like that, it ain't one guy. It's the whole team, right? Yeah. So now as the head coach, that's really what I want to accentuate, right? I mean, listen, we know, we talk about the coaching staffs and how good our coaching staff is in the Detroit, but you guys know more than anything, this is a player's game. It's a player's game. I always tell the coaches, it's like 10 to 20% coaching, and it's 80 or 90% players making plays. But we got to put those guys in the best position. And so, you know, I just think that background for me, but you got to put all these guys together, coaches and players, and it's got to be a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be all about the team. And I think I've witnessed that and experienced that with some of the teams I've been with.
All right, now, your Mount Rushmore of influence on your life.
Ooh.
You get four, all right? Who are those four that are up there on that hill?
Okay, well, you know, I obviously, you know, have to start, you know, with my mom and dad. I'm putting those together. I'm cheating, sorry.
Okay, all right. Okay, we let you cheat on here. We
can do what you want. Podcast.
You know, but, you know, in particular, I'm assuming this is football related, and so...
Those are your coaches.
No, it doesn't have to be football related. It's just what made you today. These four people made me me.
Perfect. So, okay, so it starts there, right?
They group in one.
And,
okay.
More. And I do think the influence they had on me, that I'm a blend of the two of them. Mm-hmm. As a coach, man, I just idolized my dad. You know, he was a stud, man. He was a stud player. He was a stud coach. He was a winner, and you know, he was the. He's a man's man. He like played with no face mask, broke his, you know, he's just a tough
I love
dude.
Him.
Like, I don't cuss very much or almost not at all, but like, I want to say when he was a tough man, he was a tough dude.
Tough right? SOB.
Yeah. He was a tough, yes, he was. And this game is about toughness, right?
Yeah,
so I just feel like that, he put that in my soul, right? He put that in my soul. As far as coaches, the two coaches, you know, it's got to be, well, the two other people would be Marv Levy, right? So I played for Marv, head coach. Just an incredible person. Like, he knew how to push every button. He was cerebral, but he was just connected with players. He was an older man, but yet he had a way to connect with everybody on the team.
A ton of great highlight films, just the NFL films. Just watching him talk.
Just watching
him talk and say things on the sidelines. Great highlights.
I've had a chance to meet him twice.
I've never met him.
I've, yeah. I was like, man, that's Marv. That's like,
well, and he's from, I'm from Chicago, you know, was in Chicago for a long time. Yeah. So, but him and then kind of his partner in crime, you know, Bill Polian, who was the GM. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he was the guy that drafted me. He was the guy when we went to Carolina, when he went to Carolina as the GM, you know, he signed me as a free agent to be the first quarterback in Panthers history. I mean, just for a couple games until Kerry Collins would take over since he was the fifth pick in the draft.
You didn't even have to say that. But, we'll take that off.
Yeah. But Bill, everywhere I've been in my football career, Bill Polian's stamp is on it, right? He's been like a football father to me in many respects. So that's three. And then, of course, who made me today is my wife. You know, my wife, we've been married 36 years. You know, you go this journey of the NFL, it's a crazy journey, right? It is. There's high highs, there's low lows. You got to have a center. You know, you got to be centered in on things. So, you know, our relationship has been a real foundation for me of strength and peace.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
And not only that, the woman can dress. Like, I'm telling you, for those that didn't see it, go back out and watch the press conference. It was beautiful. The family was beautiful.
Thank you.
Here's my last question for you, Frank. What was your
coach?
Sorry. And Peanut kind of already talked about this as the head coach, but I want to know your welcome to the NFL moment as a player as well. Like, mine was my rookie year in training camp, where I looked up one of the injured guys. He had shades on his underneath his helmet while riding a bicycle. I was like, man, this is the league. Like, this guy's big time. I want you to tell me what it was like in the 80s.
Okay, well.
When football was real.
Yeah, it's like.
Okay, when football was real. And you guys know this when you see the old film, but like when football was real, when we came in halftime of our very first game in the NFL, and I'm not going to mention any names because not that it matters, but. I come in, one of my teammates, this has lit up a cigarette.
Smoking cigarettes.
He's smoking a cigarette at halftime. And I'm like, okay.
That's awesome.
Welcome to the NFL.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? But one other quick one, if I could just, you know, for me, the real first moment, like, welcome to the NFL, my very first preseason game was against Chicago and Walter Payton, you know, and I'm on the field warming up, and there was Walter Payton. And this is a guy that I idolized. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was on the same field as Walter Payton. That was incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We always have that, man. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Frank. Thanks. All right. Exciting times ahead for Carolina Panthers, obviously with Frank Wright at the helm. And really exciting news, just, you know, now that they have the first overall pick. I think I know what they're going to pick at quarterback, but that's up to them. What do you think, Peanut?
I think they're going to do something good. We already know what they're going to do. They're going to pick a quarterback. So let's just lay it out for him to play it out. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Peanut Tillman. That's my guy, Roman Harper. We appreciate y'all. Thanks for listening.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.